In August 2014, I broke my femur taking out the trash. That's a true story, but those details are best left for another time. This connects to the John Penton story you're here to listen to because the very next day, I was supposed to be hosting a screening of the John Penton documentary that my friend Todd Huffman produced. The screening was at a theater north of Baltimore, and it was 100% sold out. And John Penton and Jack Penton, one of his sons, were coming to the theater to meet and greet, sign autographs, etc. Big deal, I know. And I was in the hospital. It was a pretty bad break. Broken wrist, too. But not only did the screening still happen, John and Jack detoured to visit me in the hospital. A cherished moment in my life, for sure. About a year later, I'm knocking on John's front door to report for this essay you're about to listen to, and I mean, he's 90 at this time and struggling to remember who I was or why I was there, and I said, "Remember the guy who broke his leg taking out the trash?" He paused, he grinned, he looked up and grabbed my arm and said, "Of course," and started laughing. Then we sat down for coffee. Every time I've seen him since, I'm the guy who broke his leg taking out the trash. That's our connection. It was through watching that movie, the John Penton documentary, and reading his biography that led me down the path of the subject of this story. I thought there was more to it. While I didn't think I ended up with the story I thought I was going to, I did get a man who rushed all his life to take a pause and reflect on one of the many incredible accomplishments he had had over his now 100 years of life. Happy birthday, John Penton. Visit shop.wewentfast.com and show your love for strong stories. That's how we keep this brand going. We have We Went Fast branded apparel, but also licensed shirts and artwork with On Any Sunday, Jeremy McGrath, Ricky Carmichael, James Stewart, and more legends that will be announced soon. Shop.wewentfast.com. And now, John Penton was in a hurry. The search for deeper meaning in Penton's 1959 record-breaking transcontinental ride. John Penton opens his front door with a slight look of confusion on his face. He knows about the scheduled visit, but he's still clearly puzzled by a young man from Baltimore drove 400 miles to Amherst, Ohio, just to chat. Now 90, Penton's peak height of 5'5" has been rounded off with age. The once athletic build he'd had as one of the greatest motorcycle racers of his era is gone, now immortalized in the engravings of the plaques and trophies that bear his name, and in the book and movie about his life, both created by other men who admired him. Penton has never asked for any of this attention, and it still makes him chuckle that people continue to find his life interesting. Wearing a long-sleeved Husaberg t-shirt with tatters and holes from more than 2 decades of use, and black suspenders that hold up green cargo shorts, he turns and waves me inside to a small kitchen table that is just room for 3. His wife, Donna, washes the dishes from breakfast, and John sits and shuffles a stack of papers. The tick-tock of the grandfather clocks in the house fills the dead space, while Penton waits for me to explain why I'm here. Of all the deals, victories, awards, and milestones that made him an international motorcycle industry legend, I only want to talk about one. Of the nearly 33,000 days John Elford Penton has been alive, I'm here to discuss slightly more than 2. The 52 hours, 11 minutes, and 1 second of his life he spent riding from New York City to Los Angeles in early June 1959. That transcontinental ride, which annihilated the existing record by more than 25 hours, has always seemed like an incompletely told story. It was 1 page in his biography and a few minutes in a movie over 2 hours in length. He laughs, tilts his head back, and says, "Oh my."
The little incidences that naturally happen along the way.
So many of them are gone, Penton says after several moments of pause. But then he immediately jumps into the end of the ride, to a moment on Route 66, west of Needles, California.
I never saw Flanders when I... As a matter of fact, I never knew he was following me until he did catch me up. And fortunately, he caught me up before I hit, you know, the populated area of Riverside, Los Angeles.
He's talking about Earl Flanders. At the time, very few people knew Penton was attempting the record. Only his brothers and Al Bondi, the U.S. BMW distributor with whom he'd stayed the night in New York before his departure. Flanders is Earl Flanders, the Western BMW distributor. He got a call from Bondi and waited for Penton in the Mojave Desert west of Needles to help guide him through Los Angeles to the Western Union office where his time was recorded. A photographer took photos, the news went out on the AP and UP wires, and soon the entire world knew the name John Penton. The first transcontinental racers. The first person to cross the United States on a motorized vehicle was George Wyman in 1903. Riding a California motorbicycle, he spent 50 days traveling from San Francisco to New York. The Bicycling World and Motorcycle Review reported on his progress, and the motorcycle magazine contracted him to write 5 articles about his journey. The most famous name associated with transcontinental rides, and whom the term Cannonball Run is named after, is Irwin Baker, who set dozens of long-distance records, including a motorcycle ride across the country, San Diego to New York, in 11 days, 12 hours, and 10 minutes in 1914. Like Wyman, he wrote about his own journey in a 10-page detail-rich article for Motorcycle Illustrated. In the desert, he put a pebble beneath his tongue to keep him from wanting to exhaust his water supply, ran out of gas in Arizona, and carried a .38 caliber gun which he used to kill animals that attacked him. John Penton's inspiration. In 1958, Penton spent a month on his bike, soul-searching in Mexico following the death of his first wife, Catherine. He ended that journey with a straight-shot ride from L.A. to Amherst, stopping only for fuel. His older brother, Ted, encouraged him to try to beat the transcontinental record. At that time, it was held by Earl Robinson, 77 hours and 53 minutes. It had stood since 1935. John liked the idea of the challenge, and also because they thought it could help them sell more motorcycles at the family dealership. Proving that one of their brands could reliably cross the country would be good for business. My brothers played a big part in my mind, Penton says. They always encouraged me forward. They had lots of faith in me. Penton trained for the ride by slipping through a hole in the fence of the Ohio Turnpike and running end to end through the night. Tim Masterson has crossed the country 25 times and rides at least 50,000 miles a year. He's the president of the Wyman Memorial Project and says long-distance riders call it extending their riding horizon. People ask me how I can ride 1,500 miles at a time, Masterson said. One gas tank at a time. Each time you reach for a challenge, it's always wrought with uncertainty. Like ultramarathoners and other long-distance athletes, long-distance riders, or LDRs in the business, see what they do as a physical challenge to conquer. It's the experience of the ride and not the destination or things along the way, Masterson says. It's all about riding the bike. Penton's riding horizon was already built up through all the miles he spent in the saddle, traveling to the major enduro races, competing on the same bike, a German-built NSU, and then riding it home. He also realized his knack for LDR in the weeks he spent riding and mourning the loss of his young wife. By the time he rolled away from the New York Western Union office on Broadway and into the Lincoln Tunnel at 5:59 a.m. on June 8, 1959, Penton was more than ready to cross the country in one sleepless dash. Although he admits today that he had no set time or goal, interviews given to Cycle magazine indicate that he was shooting for 54 hours. Riding a 600cc 35 horsepower BMW R69 with two small modifications, a 6-gallon fuel tank, and a fender rack, the 33-year-old rode across the newly built turnpikes of the eastern United States. He remembers waving to his brothers who were on the side of the Ohio Turnpike near Amherst, and vividly recalls the moment he saw flashing lights coming into St. Louis. Word was passed from New York. A motorcycle dealer in St. Louis arranged for a group, which included two police officers, to help guide him through the city. They handed him two ham sandwiches and two cups of milk without stopping. At the turnpike toll booth, he hurriedly asked the operators to stamp his letter to further legitimize his run. With the gas station attendants, he was short in conversation. "As I went across the country, those stops were so brief," Penton says. "As I would leave, I'm sure those people were wondering, what's wrong with that guy?" In Oklahoma, he encountered 200 miles of driving rain and strong winds and 110-degree heat in Amarillo, Texas, but overall, he remembers the weather being exceptional. The only, quote, blemish of the run was a rest stop near Flagstaff, Arizona, about 500 miles from L.A. The road was blacktop, it was night, and Penton was seeing double. "Those lines were getting closer and closer together, and I was getting into trouble," he says. He stopped, set two alarm clocks, and shut his eyes for 45 minutes. At 8:10 a.m. on June 10, still wearing his rain pants from the Oklahoma showers, Penton stopped in front of the Western Union office in downtown L.A. to record his official time, 3,051 miles in 52 hours, 11 minutes, and 1 second, traveling at an average speed of 58 miles per hour. Motorcyclist magazine reported that very little fanfare greeted Penton. He handed his tattered and stamp-filled letter to Miss Jeanon Smith, a Western Union employee, and posed for the camera of George O'Day of the Los Angeles Herald Press. He gave reporters a few quips, "Some people like to climb mountains," and "just for kicks," when asked why he rode across the country so quickly. After 12 hours of sleep, he met with Floyd Clymer, publisher of Cycle and a future fellow AMA Motorcycle Hall of Fame member, attended some flat track races at Ascot Speedway, and was introduced by announcer Roxy Rockwood. There he met Roger Ward, who had recently won his first of two Indianapolis 500 races. "That must have been a lot tougher ride than my 500 miles, Ward told Penton. After visiting friends in Riverside, Penton rode home and moved on to the next challenge, which was to try to earn a gold medal at the International 6 Days Enduro. Regrettably, the one racing goal he never achieved. 9 years later, Tibor Sarasi, a 22-year-old Hungarian, bought a BMW from Penton's dealership and rode from New York to L.A. in 45 hours, 41 minutes. With more interstate options, Sarasi's ride was 2,687 miles, nearly 400 fewer miles than Penton's. The details of his ride were documented in a Cycle World feature in December 1968. By that point, Penton was importing motorcycles with his own last name emblazoned on the gas tank. The search for more. I naively believed that there was unpublished information to be gleaned from Penton himself, that maybe the many and more knowledgeable and talented historians before me didn't ask the right questions or didn't read his journal from the ride. Penton didn't keep one. He wrote nothing down, which was the exact opposite of his younger sister, Patricia Penton Limebach, a member of the Ohio Agriculture Hall of Fame, who wrote a column for the Chronicle-Telegram for 40 years and 3 books, which all contain private details of her life. For John, when one challenge finished, he looked for the next. "I rushed all my life," he says. "That's what I did." When asked why, he tries to explain, but after a few minutes concludes with, "I can't answer that question. I don't know why." I came to Amherst to talk about a single motorcycle ride, but the conversation often veered into World War II, where Penton crossed the Atlantic Ocean 3 times with the Merchant Marines and risked the wrath of German U-boats. He watched ships go down, rescued soldiers from the Mediterranean Sea, including former schoolmate Mack McKenzie, and sailed to Okinawa and Korea in the Navy, where he waited for the defeated Japanese to leave Seoul. We even wandered into a discussion about what he believes to be the most revolutionary product in off-road motorcycling history, the O-ring chain. Never mind the fact that it was Penton who introduced the small displacement off-road motorcycle to the U.S. market in the form of a 125cc, 15.5 horsepower, 185-pound two-stroke called the Penton. Nope. He's more fascinated in how riders today can race for a week in the ISDE and not swap a chain. "They don't even have to think about it," he exclaims. The chain conversation then causes him to bring up a product he feels stupid about not having invented himself. Handguards. "Look at these hands," he says, holding up his wrinkly and bumpy nonagenarian paws. The knobby knuckles and deep purple lines tell stories of the many trees that were unfortunate enough to be in the path of one of his motorcycles. And then, after 3 hours of discussions that weaved in and out of the transcontinental ride, it's obvious that time has stolen the rest of the details. Penton's life is so full, the transcontinental ride is somewhat of a footnote. It's almost as if he's being asked to recount the details of a decades-gone trip to the grocery store. He leans forward to examine a piece of paper on the table before him. He looks up at the reporter. "I have a tax problem that I have to go take care of today," he says. And that's it. The next challenge, while minor, waits at the Lorain County Courthouse, and John Penton rushes off to face it. Thanks for listening. Again, shop.wewentfast.com. Tell your friends about it. Share this podcast with a friend. Share the print story at wewentfast.com with a friend. You can see lots of photos of John over the years, including photos from the transcontinental ride. And buy some t-shirts and hats. Christmas is coming. Shop.wewentfast.com.
What was your rush?
Huh?
What was your rush?
I rushed all my life. That's the way I did. I can't answer that question that you asked.
Hmm.
I just have always...